NPR correspondent Anne Garrels began reporting daily from Baghdad in early March. She was the only U.S. network staffer to continue broadcasting from there, and the only American female reporter who stayed. So many listeners inquired about her well-being, the Morning Edition sent NPR's special correspondent Susan Stamberg to check in with Anne at her home in northwestern Connecticut.
She's fine. Needs more sleep, needs to regain some weight, needs to go marketing. But at home, in a forest compound that's been in her husband's family for generations, Anne Garrels can relax on her sunny, breezy lawn. She has withstood sandstorms, oil fire smog, bombs, bullets, the Iraqi Ministry of Disinformation, U.S. forces firing on her hotel, and too many Kit Kats packed to supplement what she says was the dog food they served in the Palestine Hotel.
So here's my first question. How many cartons of cigarettes did you pack, and what did you do when you ran out of them?
The wonderful thing about war zones is that you can always get cigarettes.
Before and after the 26-day war, Anne Garrels smoked and spoke on her satellite phone from Baghdad. Persistent, precise, human reporting. Her steady or rattled or scared, but always authoritative voice taking listeners through some terrible times.
At the Al-Noor Hospital, families flood in, desperately calling out names, hoping to find their relatives are alive.
She covered the injuries, the destruction, days and nights of precision bombing, then the chaos of looting and snipers in the streets.
Did you sleep? It sounded to us.
I sleep very well. Sleep is what I do best. It's my best talent. Come on.
At home in Connecticut, with three happy chocolate Labradors and a huge letter A, which her husband, artist Vint Lawrence, planted in purple and yellow crocuses on the front lawn, NPR's Anne Garrels tells what it was like.
It was all bad. After a couple of days of the bombing, you realized how accurate it was. And it wasn't scary, curiously. It was more dealing with the Iraqi security apparatus and the worrying that they were going to arrest us, use us as hostages. And then at the very end, the scary part was when the ground fighting started, because you had no idea where it was going to erupt and if you were going to be in the middle of it.
You had a satellite phone. What else did you have with you? A computer so you could send emails when there was electricity?
Even when the electricity went out, I had a car battery. And I'd learned this in Afghanistan. I put jumper cables on the car battery, and that provided electricity for my computer and my sat phone. So that was okay. The only problem was that you had to, every day, you had to take the car battery. And car batteries are heavy. The elevator didn't usually work, so you had to take them down 11 flights and bring it up 11 flights and go recharge it in somebody's car. And then we had sort of one dim light that the hotel generator was able to provide. So I hot-wired the light to an electrical strip. So then I actually was able to plug in the computer and plug in the sat phone, and I didn't have to worry about running out of power.
That satellite phone, you weren't supposed to have it on you.
I had smuggled it into the hotel, and they were sweeping the hotel at night looking for the sat phones. So I would broadcast at night in the dark so they couldn't see the antenna. And then I had decided that it would be very smart if I broadcast naked so that if, God forbid, the secret police were coming through the rooms, it would give me maybe 5 minutes to answer the door, pretend I'd been asleep, you know, sort of go, I don't have any clothes on, and it would give me maybe a few seconds to go hide the phone.
What'd you do just in terms of basics, cleanliness?
Well, there was a little bit of water each day. And I had already bought huge trash cans, which I'd been carrying from hotel to hotel to hotel, and I had filled them up. And the great thing was that there was no light in the bathroom, so you couldn't really see how disgusting you looked. Really, when I got to Amman and I looked in the mirror, that was not good. That was definitely not good.
How did you work every day? I mean, you had to get out of that hotel. And how could you just do the plain job of reporting?
You thought of ways that looked benign where you could go meet people.
But didn't you always have a minder there listening and keeping track?
For a while, I did have a minder from the Information Ministry. But then I was just incredibly fortunate that a man who had basically been acting as my driver through various bribes and, you know, the sort of end of the regime madness was able to be assigned to me as my minder, although he was not a government employee and was not an intelligence agent. I mean, he was a friend, and he was my eyes and ears. I couldn't go see families because the security blanket was so thick, and I would give him a series of questions, and he would do the interview for me. So it was a lot like working in the Soviet Union had been where I began my career. You know, when you work in a totalitarian system where the fear factor is so great, you can figure out ways to get around. You don't have all the information you want, but it's amazing how much you still can get.
Mm-hmm. I've heard from war correspondents about those moments, 3 a.m., sitting up in bed, looking at themselves in the mirror and saying, why? What am I doing here?
And of course I said, this is the last time I'm doing this, and everybody looks at me and goes, yeah, right. I'm not a war junkie. I'm a workaholic. I didn't set out to be a war correspondent. It just, the wars kept happening. And this time I had just covered it since September, and I knew I was in a position to do it, that I had the contacts and the people and that I could do it. Mm-hmm. I think I don't have as much bounce. I mean, I was one of the oldest there. You know, I looked around and the kids were, they just had a lot more resilience. There's something unseemly. Also, I can't do it to my husband again. I'll never do it to him again.
Ann Garrels will be 52 in July. For months, her husband emailed an impromptu diary to family and friends, bulletins on his wife at war. On April 18th, the day Annie came home, Vint Lawrence finished the diary this way. Scheherazade, that other fabulous female storyteller of Baghdad, ends the saga of the Thousand and One Nights with the line, "And then it was morning." Indeed it is, Vint Lawrence concluded. Happy Easter to all. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
Susan's full interview with Ann, photographs, and some of Ann's war reports from Iraq are at npr.org.